Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. In this episode, we ask whether Toy Story 4 reaches infinity or even beyond. And we ask our podcast guests of the last year how they would rank Pixar's entire filmography. I'm Jake Cunningham, your sergeant of speech for today. And in my bucket of soldiers, I have recruited Sam Howlett.
Hello.
And Ella Kemp.
Hello.
And together we're going to scope out the new toys in town and let you know whether there's anything to worry about or if we need to be excited about the buzz. All right.
I'm glad you didn't make a Woody joke.
Oh, no, that was too easy, right? All right, so we're getting into Toy Story 4, a film that so many people didn't ask for, and yet we have it anyway. But what is this one about? So in the latest installment of Pixar's beloved series, we've got Woody, Buzz, and the rest of the playroom, and of course some new and returning members of the gang contending with Forky, a plastic spork who is in denial about his status as a toy. They embark on a road trip. Forky decides to head out on his own, and the other toys must track him down and along the way discover a whole new world in the process. So, can I gather from you two what your expectations were going into Toy Story 4?
I just wondered why, really.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think I loved the whole trilogy and felt kind of differently rewatching it, but when Toy Story 4 was announced, when was it? It was a couple of years ago now, but it was already a few years after Toy Story 3 had been in cinemas. And yet, in my mind, I just thought, we've only just had the perfect closing thing. I was happy with that. I was sad, then I was happy. I made my peace with it and I moved on. And I thought, what are you doing? Not even just angry or annoyed. I was just a bit confused. And I thought, there's nowhere for this to go, really.
Yeah, I agree. Toy Story 1, 2 and 3 is like the perfect trilogy. You know, it has a very strong beginning, middle and end. You have full closure. Toy Story 3 is the perfect way to end something that big and that long. And they, really quickly after that, they were like, oh, we're doing another one. And it was a really strange decision.
Yeah, and it had lots of production delays. We'll get into it maybe a bit later on. This script ends up having 9 different writers attached to it. People come and go. It gets pushed back on the Pixar slate. Incredibles 2 comes forward to take it over because that's progressing so quickly. I think it's a really interesting film from that side of things because they had scripts for this being developed whilst Toy Story 3 was being written as well. So at least in some way you realise that they're perhaps taking a lot of care with it. They're taking their time with it. They realise maybe how important this is to people. So if they are going to do a cynical cash grab, at least they're going to do it with perhaps as much heart as they gave the previous three as well.
Yeah. Also, allegedly, Toy Story 4 and Incredibles 2 are the last Pixar sequels. I read that after that they were going to commit to doing original ones. I don't know if this will be a lifelong thing, but
I don't think that will last forever. But no. I think they've learned some lessons because there was that incredible streak from, well, if we ignore kind of Toy Story 2, really, like from Toy Story all the way up to Cars 2 was that a great run.
Yeah.
Like Cars 1 is fine. Like, it's not a bad film, but that streak was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it was those sequels, and obviously all wrapped up in the Disney purchase as well, and that franchising of it all. But I mean, we saw the trailer for Onward play before this, which is their new kind of troll road trip adventure. Mm-hmm.
Looks fun.
Yeah. The animation style looks a little DreamWorks-y to me.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're only seeing a little section of that world in the trailer. Mm-hmm. Maybe once we get into the forests and the mountains and the moons of Pixar taking on high fantasy, I think that could be quite fun. So we established that we're all a bit cynical going into this one. These were our films. We own them. God, why can't they just make Rey not a Skywalker, you know? How do we actually think about it quickly? Ella, do you think Toy Story 4 is good?
Yes.
Yeah, Sam?
It is good.
Yeah, it's a good film. Yeah, I'm shocked.
Thank God it's a good film.
Very quickly into this film, I was like, oh, okay, it's good. Oh, they've made a good film. Interesting.
Oh, I thought they were going to try and make a bad one.
What a weird decision. They've made a good film. It's good.
Yeah, that was perhaps the biggest shock.
The twist is it's good.
I was ready to go in there and be really cold. And it was one of these press screenings where it's on the weekend and people can bring their kids and stuff like that. And they put out sweets and we get in the foyer and there's a Buzz Lightyear there.
I'm tearing up just thinking about it.
Someone's getting a photo with Buzz Lightyear. It begins with this prologue where we see how Bo Peep, who is absent from Toy Story 3, is taken away from Andy's home. Andy being the kid from the first
disowned by Molly, his sister.
And this is where we see that breakup between Bo Peep and Woody. And then we flash forward 9 years later, the camera pans up through these stormy weather and then it breaks through onto that blue sky, those white clouds, the piano kicks in, we're back in Toy Story. And in a, like, I know that they're manipulating me.
But they're doing it so well.
Yeah, and as soon as that comes in, I'm there. And I'm back to just like...
They can manipulate me all they want.
Yeah, yeah. Love to be manipulated. And yeah, they make an interesting film. I think, like, thematically speaking, it makes some brave choices considering where we left the characters at Toy Story 3. Sam, you mentioned that you think Toy Story 3 is a perfect endpoint for the characters. I think that is true of a lot of them. This film falls more focused in on Woody in particular.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think it goes on a really interesting journey with Woody, and perhaps we view this as an extremely well-crafted epilogue.
Yeah, that's how I view it as well. I mean, I'll still, even after seeing this film and really liking this film, I'll still feel like Toy Story 3 is the end of that franchise because it's perfectly caps everything off. And this is kind of like a little, what did they do next sort of thing. And the fact that it so focuses on Woody so tightly compared to all the other films, I think, is a really smart decision.
Yeah. Yeah, I think perhaps mostly connected to Toy Story 1. Toy Story 1 is about Woody having to deal with the fact that he is not toy number one anymore. Buzz comes in, what if I have to share the love that I receive from Andy and the other toys? And then this is Woody grappling with the fact with, what if no one is going to give me that love? Because even Toy Story 3, it's, I can let go of Andy, but I'll still be in a place where I can have that affection and that joy from someone. But Toy Story 4 begins with him in a place where even Bonnie, the kid we see him with at the end, isn't really interested in Woody anymore. And so what does a toy do when it can no longer serve the purpose a toy has? And that's the question in the center of this. And a great mirror to that is the character of Forky.
Oh, gosh. Forky, where to begin? We begin in kindergarten. And Bonnie is struggling to make friends. And so what does she do? She makes her own friend. She gets a single-use plastic spork. She gets some pipe cleaners, bends them a bit, sticks some googly eyes, sticks them on again. There's a best friend right there. That's the whole friend. And she makes this friend. And then Woody goes home with Forky, realises that Forky is...
A toy, alive, whether he wants it or not.
Right, and then you've got this whole thing where Woody has to explain to Forky how and why he's alive without really knowing why himself.
Yeah, this is what I think. Like, the comparison between Woody and Forky is great. Mm. Woody is a toy who is no longer needed, who is effectively being thrown away. And Forky is a toy who doesn't want to be a toy, who is receiving all of the love
that Woody
wants.
He just wants to be thrown away.
Yeah.
Trash?
Like, the joke is there so many times, but I enjoyed it every time when
Forky... It goes on for a long time, this joke.
Forky just... Because he's made it a trash, he keeps trying to throw himself away.
But I think that the joke works because it's as much about, like, what the toys can... Like, how they are appreciated by the kids and other toys, but as much about what they want to give them back.
Yeah.
And Forky wanting to give no one anything and just be in the trash. Are you both okay? And
I'm fine. I'm an adult, so.
Yeah. And Woody still wanting to give, like, love, but as much to the other toys as to the kids, because I wasn't expecting the relationship that he has with Forky to seem more like... Woody is taking on the role of a carer and a parent and keeping watch and making sure that people give stuff back as opposed to just, you know, being cared for and played with. And also, after revisiting the first three films, it's interesting to notice that this is the first time where the toys refer to their owners as kids, whereas before it was always like, do you have an owner? Whereas this whole... Throughout Toy Story 4, the whole thing is, do you have a kid? Do you have a kid? And, you know, I don't have a kid, but it made me think, I can imagine parents watching this finding a whole other layer to this that I really hadn't considered.
I think this film, more so, a lot more so than any other before, really delves into the relationship that they have with their owners, the kids, but not just on a philosophical level of what it means to have that relationship, but also the level of human interaction in this film. Like, there was a lot more toys talking to humans in this, even if they're just trying to scare them or like, you know, flashbacks of them interacting and fighting with them. It's not something really seen. Like, there is a, like, you have that once in Toy Story 1 where Woody scares Sid.
Yeah.
And you don't see his mouth move or anything like that. It's
because he says, so play nice.
Yeah,
that's when he comes to life.
Yeah. And that's it. Whereas this, they're chatterboxes all the way. Like, you've got Kristen Schaal, the Triceratops, is like yelling at Bonnie's dad.
Pretending to be a sat-nav.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're properly interacting with the humans.
Also, you don't see Andy's mum, do you? Do you ever see Andy's mum?
I think maybe
Bonnie's parents a lot in this, and Bonnie.
I think at the beginning, when there's the bit with like the separation between Bonnie and between Bo and Woody.
Oh right. Yeah.
Maybe then there's a little bit there, but not so much.
And along with Forky, we've got lots of other great new characters. Giggle McDimples. It's like a Polly Pocket. Yeah.
Sorry, that's Officer Giggle McDimples.
Officer Giggle McDimples.
Yeah, that's right.
Apologies. they're called Polly Pockets, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like tiny little dolls within their own micro dollhouse.
A drive.
Yeah. And she's like the bad cop to Bo Peep's good cop.
Yeah.
In the weird kind of detective.
Who used story. To have a relationship with He-Man.
Yes.
She's so smart. And she gives Bo so much romantic advice so many times. She just comes back and... I wasn't expecting those kind of dynamics as well that really just, I don't know, like it's bad cop, but not in a, oh, I'm the villain that you're going to laugh at kind of way. There's just lots
tough.
Of layers of,
tough
yeah.
Cop.
Yeah, it's a Brooklyn Nine-Nine type character there. And we've got the Combat Carls.
Oh, the Combat Carls.
Like kind of these G.I. Joe action man type guys.
Voiced by Carl Weathers.
Voiced by Carl Weathers, that like one of them just wants a high five and people keep blanking him. Another stupid joke. There's lots of just almost slapstick stuff here that I don't remember as much of in the previous films as well. Like, it's just silly body humour as well.
Yeah.
And it all works as like tiny videos, and you can imagine it being cut down to these 30 seconds like skits that you'll then rewatch and then quote and repackage so much
like
more.
YouTube highlights of Duke Kaboom. That's Keanu Reeves' character, who's like Canadian Evil Knievel character. He's like a wind-up motorbike stuntman guy. And when he was purchased, his kid didn't like him because he couldn't jump as far as the Duke Kaboom in the advert could. And it, like, this is a whole subplot where Rojan.
Rojan.
Yeah. and Duke Kaboom like needs this redemption, and that's all like going
validation.
On in the background.
Yeah.
And that, like, as much as I really enjoy these characters, we've got, is it Ducky and Bunny? That's mm-hmm. Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. They're really fun as well.
Carnival toys that I've just been hanging on the back of the target shoot and waiting to be won.
Yeah, and like they're great. All of these new characters are a lot of fun. We had the same thing with Toy Story 3. We had the same thing with Toy Story 2.
Yeah.
Introduced the new characters. Somehow they managed to gel with everything. But are we within the same formula that we've seen before with the introduction of those new characters and maybe the villains as well?
Yeah, I think... So should we get into the script now a bit?
Because yeah, I think so.
The script has 9 writers, which is a lot for a film like this. And I think this is the least tightly written of all the Toy Story films. I think you can tell that there's a lot of different ideas that have been kind of merged together. And I think part of that comes from all these new characters, who are all great, but there's a lot of them. And also the film's villain is Gabby Gabby, who is a doll.
Like an old Victorian doll.
And her kind of arc and her villain plot is very similar to Lotso Huggenbear from Toy Story 3, who was also quite similar to Stinky Pete from Toy Story 2. These are kind of abandoned toys that have then, they've sort of twisted them and have turned them into villains.
Yeah.
And this idea of like keeping toys trapped somewhere is quite similar. And she's particularly similar to Lotso Huggenbear, this idea of like a cute toy that's actually evil.
Yes.
It is, but I think we've moved on from Toy Story 3, and I think I agree that the setup is very similar in that you think they're cute and they've got this resentment inside them. But what I found interesting about Gabby Gabby, and that then also I think is weirdly reflected in how the kind of feelings that Woody's grappling with, is that she's got a mission that she wants to go on. She doesn't just want to punish the people who have wronged her and the toys who are better off than her. She's got this ambition. Her voice box is broken, and so she says, well, once my voice box is fixed, I'll be better. I'll be loved. I can go back out into the world, and then she'll be happy again.
As well as being the villain of the piece, what's a villain without some great henchmen as well?
Oh, yeah. The dummies. Yeah. There's one called Vincent.
They're the Bensons. The three of them.
Yeah. Just these horrible, screaming ventriloquist dummies. Yeah, I think there's more horror imagery in this than we've seen before as well.
The symbols monkey is pretty creepy.
Yeah,
well, and there is a
Sid in
Sid's Sid's toys, and there's also an actual baby doll in the third one as well.
Oh,
quite
that
horrible.
Has the blinking eyes. That's pretty okay. Yeah,
but the Bensons are horrible.
Yes. Yeah.
And the fact that it takes a while for them to make a noise. I mean, they do, it's just like
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one for the kids, isn't it? All right.
We haven't really mentioned Bo Peep at all either. And she's like a huge character in this.
Yeah, yeah. And really interesting that she wasn't in 3. Going back to that idea of this, whether there were 2 scripts going around at the same time.
Yeah.
What was happening there? Because going back to how the first film looked, where you like Bo Peep is just a character in there, a doll, we don't really pay much attention to it because of like you at the time you couldn't have much detail of these toys. They kind of all have this same kind of slick plasticky feel to them.
Yeah.
And in this, we suddenly realize, oh, Bo Peep is porcelain, and like she's like shines and she looks amazing, and she's totally given a lot to do here.
I think I had a bit of a concern as well before this film came out that one of the first teaser images that was released was of Bo Peep, and her outfit is different and she swapped her big skirt for these practical trousers, and everyone was thinking, oh God, is this
she's
going to be
Gamesy.
A girl power with a capital G the whole time? And I was really worried about that, but I felt the whole way through I was completely convinced by her storyline, by her performance, just everything she does, her dynamics with everyone else. I'd never considered her to be that... I never thought she was a bad character, but just like, she's there, she's nice.
She's
Woody likes
character.
Her, so I like her. Like, she's, you know... But I thought she was so important in this, and it was just so wonderful to watch that they really do nurture that relationship. There's so much romance in this film, and I thought it was really satisfying because you could... To me, it felt deserved, and it felt like it had built for so long that it needed these kind of rewards. But then, you know, her relationship with Giggle McDimples, and then all of the new toys, and just on her own and figuring out the different ways that you can be alone, and the whole time Woody's like, I'm lost and everything is panic and despair, and she's all like, oh, but this is what independence is. And I think where a lot of other films that try to put female characters more into the spotlight go wrong is they'll just use the word independent and not explain it, and they'll just go for like strong and independent, and they won't flesh that out and they won't let them do anything. Whereas here, like, those two words are just the starting point, and she's got this whole story that unfolds, and I think it's so good. She's yeah. great.
Are we happy that this film exists in the end, despite our cynicism going into it?
Yeah, I'm definitely happy this exists. As I said, you know, it feels like an epilogue in a way, and Woody's arc is the whole film, and I do think that Woody's had this arc before a little bit, but it gets proper attention here, and it's a really, I think it might be the funniest of the Toy Story films.
Yeah, I think it is the least focused, particularly on the supporting cast
yeah.
as well.
Buzz
is nothing.
Yeah,
it's really.
And Rex and Slinky and
yeah,
Jesse.
Whereas I think they've found that balance in the other ones.
Yeah.
Of being able to bring in the new toys, balance the old one, give everyone an important
yeah.
task. Who do you think this film is for then? I think really the answer is fans of the Toy Story franchise.
You've seen Toy Story 1 or its sequel Toy Story 2 or the third installment Toy Story 3, then you might enjoy the fourth installment Toy Story 4.
What about Toy Story of Terror? Toy yeah. Story that time forgot? I would also throw in the Iron Giant just because of the nature of Forky and that question of what if a toy didn't want to be a toy. Mm. And the Iron Giant is based around that question of what if a gun didn't want to yeah. be a gun.
That's I might add very briefly Up, but merely for the first few minutes when it replays the whole life of Carl and Ellie and that romance and that thing. And I genuinely think that the way that they've treated Woody and Bo's story deserves to be on a similar level, I'd say.
Okay. All right. That is high praise indeed.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Right, it's time for us to get into our Pixar ranking. Now, I went and got in touch with everyone who's been on the show in the last year, any guest spots we've had, and asked them to send me their top 10 Pixar films so we could get a definitive Curzon podcast ranking of Pixar's output. And you've sent me yours as well. I won't delve into the details of where you have ranked things, but I'll start with some honourable mentions that didn't quite make the cut. Actually, curiously...
yes.
Some stuff that got no mentions. So I went through a lot of people for
yes.
this. What do you reckon?
Cars 2.
No mention of Cars 2.
Cars 3.
No mention of Cars 3.
Cars.
No mention of Cars.
Oh, okay.
The Good Dinosaur.
No mention of The Good Dinosaur. Yeah. No, I like The Good Dinosaur.
I haven't seen The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah, but how good is
it's like a good dinosaur. That's
if you had
it.
To rate him out of 10, or would you have to rate him out of 20?
I need an yeah. extra 10.
Yeah, it's like this is like championship manager stats out of 20. He's a good boy.
Okay, that's good.
No mention of him. No mention of Brave. I thought there might be a Brave in there.
Not Brave enough.
Nope.
No, not at all. I was surprised to get to see that there were even a couple of mentions of Monsters University.
Monsters University is all right.
It's all right. That's it. Yeah. Mm. All right. Right. So going through some honourable mentions, didn't make the cut. few shorts in there, Bounding.
People put the shorts in their top tens.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, Steven Ryder, regular.
I know Steven Ryder.
We all know him. We all love him. He put three in there.
Oh,
did he?
Steven.
Yeah, I put one in there.
You know. Okay.
We've got Bounding, Day and Night, which is the one that I put in.
Day and Night's really good, yeah.
That's the one that came before Toy Story 3,
yeah.
The two kind of inanimate
yeah.
bodies
oh, yeah.
that are shaped that like, filled with skies.
Lovely.
Well, like, the background is them.
Yeah.
That makes sense. It's hard it's to describe.
It really is. That's why I put it in there, because it is. I think that's their most experimental.
Yeah,
sure.
Definitely.
Partly Cloudy was in there.
Which one's the, Partly Cloudy?
It's the one with the two... It's another one that's like skies and cloud-based.
Oh, is it like a happy big, cloud and a sad cloud? Yeah. Okay.
Monsters University.
Yeah.
Incredibles 2.
Oh, that was in my top 10. I like Incredibles 2.
Sorry. Bow.
Very good short.
Presto. Yeah. Coco. Missing out on the top 10. A Bug's Life.
That's a real shame.
Entering into the top 10. The film that someone once said will change the way you think about thinking. It's Inside Out. number 9, Wall-E. That would have been higher for me. I think Wall-E is like a great achievement.
Wall-E's bottom half for me. I think
Inside
Wall-E...
Out would have been way higher for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. It's interesting because when Inside Out came out, it was like, this is incredible stuff. And I think it's waned maybe just because it's a bit complicated.
It's for me, it's not as charming as the other ones. It didn't quite make my top 10. I think it is like one of their best scripts, definitely.
I think
and their
it's
best concept.
Yeah, that's
but
it.
But it's just
there's it, characters.
It doesn't quite grab me as like a really charming, friendly, watchable Pixar film as some of the others do.
It's much more mature. I think it's one of the first ones when they're trying to like bridge so many different ages and be so much more ambitious and say we've got so much brains between all of us and look
you,
at everything
you don't
inside
come out
them.
Of Inside Out like you were with the other one saying, oh, I love Carl, I love Remy, I love Woody, I love Buzz. Inside Out, you're like, oh, I love the idea.
Wall-E also, I'd just quickly say that Wall-E has an incredible first like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But once they leave Earth, that film does diminish it a bit for me.
I agree.
Yeah, I think so. I think taken by itself, arguably, that opening of Wall-E is the best thing they've ever done.
Yeah, it's astounding.
Yeah. After that, Finding Nemo.
Great, love it.
Really good. Mm-hmm. Rinse that DVD a lot as well.
Super sad.
I would watch like all the making of features on that as well. I'm just amazed at the amount of time they spent just talking about water. And every interview is like, oh, we were like, what if water? we've already mentioned it. Up next was Up.
Mm-hmm. What number is this, sorry?
That is 7.
Cool. Love Up.
Yeah, big fan of Up.
Big fan of Up. I love how silly Up is as well, because the first 10 minutes, of course, as we all know, is heartbreaking and super the most serious thing they've ever done. And then by the end, you've got dogs flying planes.
Yeah. It is quite frustrating, that huge gap. And I feel like the first time I watched it, I was completely blown away by the start. And then by the time the film ended, I was still thinking about the start. And then whenever I'd tell anyone, I'd say, oh, the start was amazing. But I think the more you think about it and when you revisit it, I do appreciate the silliness a lot more.
Well,
and that balance is actually quite nice.
It's really
refreshing.
Well,
I think
by
so
the end
good.
Of it, you're having the adventure that Carl
exactly.
was having at the start in his head.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Mm. Number 6, The Incredibles.
Mm-hmm. Bit low for me. I put it as my number 1, I think.
Yeah, ooh. I think you did, yeah.
Yeah, I love The Incredibles.
I really like The Incredibles. I think considering what kind of films would dominate the box office for the 15 years after it came out, it's amazing that that script was there at that time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Then we are into the top 5 in 5th place. Toy Story 3.
Okay.
Good good place for that one to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And 4th, Ratatouille.
Yes.
Didn't make my top 10.
Didn't
make your top
10?
No. Not a massive lover of Ratatouille.
Do you not like vegetables at all?
What? Oh, I really love Ratatouille. Mm. I think Ratatouille is amazing. That one shot of him assembling the Ratatouille in all the different layers, like you can smell it. Oh,
divine.
Incredible. And the food critic, when it all goes back into his mind and it travels back to him as a kid
it's
eating
magic.
This. Oh, yeah, I really like Ratatouille. Third place was Toy Story 2.
Yeah,
okay.
Great film.
Yeah.
Stinky Pete, an amazing character.
When She Loved Me, the best song ever.
Yeah.
Also, I've never forgotten the the toy maker, the toy collector, yes, when he gets like the Cheetos on his fingers.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think such a good bit of animation.
Horrid.
That's it. I think this is where they're really kind of flexing their muscles, yeah, as character animation,
yeah,
beyond just quick, like, how can we make a story out of this, yeah, computer generated stuff we've invented?
Yeah.
This, they're kind of flexing, like when Woody discovers the old saloon town and he goes into character as the Woody from the TV shows, and he's like doing all these cowboy movements with his arms and a gun, and he's tipping his hat and all of that. So I think this steps up the comedy from Toy Story 1 for sure.
Yeah.
Second place, a film that didn't go in my top 10 that I think is fine, Monsters, Inc.
Monsters, oh, Inc. is so good.
Number two,
it's
though.
So
number
great.
Two. People like
Boo,
Monsters, Inc.
That, she's so great. And I think, for me, the thing that's amazing about Monsters, Inc. is finding that balance between, like, the characters, the toys or monsters in this case, and the human. And I think they do have some kind of more of an equal weighting, like with, you know, in Toy Story, we all know Andy, but, you know, he is, like, just the owner. But Boo, she's amazing. This little tiny kid with a fringe and very loud voice and just cries and very relatable. I love her. And yeah, and through the doors and just all the worlds it creates, like it doesn't go anywhere that fantastical, really. It just goes to kids' bedrooms.
Yeah.
Magic.
It's a great world.
I love it.
It's one of their best like world buildings, I think. Mm.
Yeah. All right, that only leaves one more film. And really, does it say that Pixar should never have made any others? Like, you started so
it's Luxo
well.
Junior.
Yeah. It's Toy Story 1. There we are. It's the best one. It's the first and the best.
It is the best one.
Yeah, I
it
think
was my
it
number. It was my number two or three.
What was your number one?
My number one was Incredibles. Yeah, but I think I'm so happy that Toy Story is number one.
Toy Story, and by a considerable
yeah,
amount.
I knew it
like
would be.
Everyone yeah. had it high in their list. It was number one for me as well. I think it's a brilliant film.
I always think. Oh, I think the third Toy Story is the best. No, I think the second one's the best. And I always end up being like, no, the first one's the best.
Yeah. Because as I was putting it together, I thought, I've always said, like, no, Toy Story 2 is the best one.
Yeah, but when it comes to it, and you think about Toy Story, the
and it's
Toy
like
Story,
the place that they hold
yeah,
for me
exactly.
and finding these films. Gosh, yeah, Toy Story 1. Who knew?
What
a
surprise.
A good film.
A good film indeed.
Yeah.
I just want to say very briefly that, to me, Toy Story 3, we've all agreed, the trilogy's perfect. And there's this breakup between Woody and Andy and everyone else. And then you think, it's open-ended. He finds another kid. His heart will mend. He will learn how to love again and everything will be great. And then in Toy Story 4, he does that. And, like, the world widens and he learns about the concept of love. And just everything seems a bit bigger and more hopeful and optimistic. And I'm like, and it's just, you know, romantic love as much as friendship and toys and humans
well,
and all of it. It's
once,
perfect. I love
once
it.
Everyone else on the list has had the chance to watch Toy Story 4.
We'll
eat
recap your words.
It, and I'm sure Toy Story 4 will become the number one.
Okay. Yes,
all right.
That's correct.
Before we go, I do want to quickly read out some highlights from Ryan Hewitt's list. Ryan's one of the producers of the show, and he was the only one who sent us little stories to go with his selections. Come on, guys, be more creative next time. But some highlights from Ryan's list. Monsters Uni, cool world, isn't it? Ratatouille, I first watched on a coach journey. One of those old coaches with a TV at the front. I was sat about 10 rows back and couldn't hear a single sound from the TV, but obviously understood every second of the story because it's genius. Which I think is right. Visually, they're so well organized to just propel you through the story, mm-hmm. regardless of whether you know what's being said. But that's because they're for kids, isn't it? He said, I was 23 when I watched Toy Story 3 hungover at Glastonbury with a tent full of kids who were my age when the first film came out, and I nearly died trying not to cry in front of them.
How did Ryan die at Glastonbury? He tried not to cry.
Inside Out, I dug because I think it was pretty right on.
Oh my God. It's not wrong.
Yeah.
Can I just say that Ryan doesn't talk like this? What's going on?
Ryan's taking on the spirit of Woody or something. I think this is right on. And Ryan also put Toy Story 1 as his top choice. He said, I was 10 years old when Toy Story came out, so that film could never be topped. Blame that on my age, not on Pixar, who are obviously great. But there we are. We figured it out. Toy Story 4 is good. Pixar make good films, and Toy Story is the best of them. If you can make it to the cinema this weekend, go and see Toy Story 4. I'm sure it will be playing wherever you look. And let us know what you think of it. You can tweet us at Curzon Cinemas or email us at podcast@curzon.com. But if you don't want to head out to the cinema, you can watch something on Curzon Home Cinema. That's the on-demand service. A couple of things on there. Weird pairing with Toy Story 4, if I'm honest. But Neighbouring Sounds has gone on
Neighbouring
there.
Sounds is really good.
Yeah.
Great film.
Like a Brazilian social commentary drama with horror elements. The director has made a recent film called Bacurau, which played at Cannes, which was one of my highlights. If you heard me talking on our Cannes episodes, I absolutely loved. So I'm really glad to see Neighbouring Sounds on the service.
Bill Street.
Is Bill Street on there now
Bill
as well?
Bill Street is on there as of this week.
Yeah. Oh, great.
You
yeah.
can catch up on your interview.
Yeah, yeah. I spoke to Barry Jenkins about that. I've been memed. That interview has spawned a screenshot, which I've seen used in memes. And so put that on my gravestone, people. And if you want to hear my interview with Barry Jenkins, you can do that on our Beale Street episode, which would have come out in February or so, I think, as well. All right. Thank you so much for listening. If it's your first time hearing the show, do subscribe. You can do that on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and watch it there. If you could leave us a review or a comment, that would be absolutely wonderful. And if you have not had enough of us, you can always keep up with us all on Twitter. Sam, you're over there at
@SamHowlett_1.
Ella?
@Ella_Kemp.
And I am there, Jake H. Cunningham. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.